Hi, everybody. I'm Connie Chan Robinson. I'm the Executive Director of the Center for Collaborative Planning, which is part of the Public Health Institute. So greetings from Sacramento, where we're based. And I am indeed in very good company here, joined by my colleagues up here on the stage. So thank you, Sabine, for leading us off. I guess I want to spend a little bit of time kind of taking what Sabine has shared with us and some of the insights about what I would describe as really what is inside of us, right, all of you, as individual leaders working in public health or in a variety of different health settings, right, in communities, organizations, et cetera. And I want to take, I think, that individual leadership into the context of community. And what does that look like? Because as we're thinking about catalyzing health equity, right, and catalyzing the power and leadership of women, there's context, right, involved, isn't there? How many of you are working in the area of research around women's health or public health? Can you raise your hand? How many of you, that's quite a bit.
Yeah.
Welcome. How many folks are in the room who are working in advocacy, sort of policy, public policy change, advocacy in the community? Raise your hands high, come on! You've got to be proud, right? Excellent. How about those of us who are working in service delivery, whether you're a provider in a community clinic, in a hospital setting, healthcare? Come on, raise your hands right high. Excellent. Wow, we've got quite a diversity here. So congratulations, you are all panelists. Right? You are all indeed leaders. So I want to spend a little bit of time, again, sort of putting some context behind when we think about what it takes to catalyze leadership, in particular among women. Sabine shared with us some of the important sort of data around who are we as women leaders anyway, right? In organizational settings, in institutions, in communities. Who's the driving force behind decisions around healthcare, provision of healthcare, decisions about healthcare? All of those things are critically important for us to be thinking about, especially in the context of equity, right? When we think about equity, what do we mean by that, even? Right? What's the environmental context, the social context that drives that? Right. There's a lot of important work being done. And so we want to, this is just my disclosure statement because Mildred asked us to kind of put the disclosure statement out here. But can I ask somebody in the audience just to read this, if you can actually read it from here, from where you are? Somebody take her? Yes, please.
Change does not happen overnight. It takes time and patience to build leadership. Groups that gain women's trust and not only listen to their needs, but let the women speak for themselves, are the ones that can take political power and translate it into changing public opinion, policy, and programs. We have seen time and time again in our work that when we really listen and provide guidance, but let the women themselves decide on the campaign and their passion, that is when policies change.
I love this quote. It certainly drives a lot of our work at the Center for Collaborative Planning when we talk about grassroots advocacy and we're talking about leadership development. So I share that with you because there's a lot of important nuggets in here, right, about community, about women in the context of community, women in the context of driving public policy and public opinion, okay? So for today, I want to share just some thoughts and some experiences, stories, about the work that we've done and have observed and experienced throughout California around contributions of women's leadership to health equity. What does that look like? What does that take? And then share with you some tools that, as a training capacity building organization, that we have used and supported women through their own leadership development and sort of the connection, right, to explore the relationship of what we describe as leadership and women's leadership and health equity and who does the work. So I apologize for this visual here because you probably cannot see it, but this is probably familiar to those of us in public health, right? This is an important sort of framework for us when we think about prevention, when we think about what it takes to produce health in communities, and particularly in terms of who's the context, right? Who are stakeholders when we think about health and who drives health and who are the consumers of health? And so the four pillars, right, are things that we're constantly sort of paying attention in all the variety of ways that you raise, when you raise your hands, right, advocacy, service provision, research, all of those things are critically important that impacts, right, each of those pillars around empowering people to really address, right, and develop their own solutions, elimination of health disparities, health and safe community environments, and then, of course, the clinical and community prevention of preventive services, right, that are important for women and families and communities. But when we look at that prevention framework, we're also reminded of a few things, right? And if we go up the bullets, right, some of those were characterized and helped us sort of, Sabine helped us kind of think about sort of who are the caregivers, right, of families, who makes healthcare decisions, right? So if we think about 80% of healthcare decisions are driven by women, that is huge, right? Think about the potential and power of that, right? Now, if we think about women and women leaders in context of organizations, right, there's some very interesting in the last 2 years, right, this sort of transition about who's in the workforce, right, and what are women in the workforce actually doing? Mm-hmm. So some of the statistics up here around, you know, by back in January 2010, we actually sort of did that little crossover, right, where women were representing the U.S. Workforce more than men. For the first time, right, we became the majority. And not only did we become a majority, but the workforce itself, right, is hugely diverse and growing diversity. Mm-hmm. Right? You can see some of the data that are up there. And for women who are in the workforce, right, education and health services are ranked first in employment. First in employment. So we all have a lot of women colleagues and peers, right, that we need to be thinking critically about supporting and how do we support that peer, right, making sure that there's constant streams, there's sort of the pipeline, right, of leaders coming in. So what does this mean for women, particularly women of color, who are leading change towards social and health equity? So when you think about, again, health equity, right, we need to be paying attention to who, how, and what we're delivering, right? So in a sort of a traditional context around kind of leadership development, right, and sort of public policy, and when we think about sort of progressive organizing, there's sort of two, it's not competing schools of thought, but they're complementary, okay? So we offer this view in terms of really making the connection between women's leadership and health equity. So in the context of social, what we describe as social justice feminism, right, that is about bringing issues of race, right, bringing issues of class, age, sexuality into feminist organizing so that there's a body of work and a movement around that. We're now transitioning as a movement, if you will, in terms of leadership development work, into what I might describe as feminist social justice. Right? How many of you have experienced, maybe are currently working or have been thinking about sort of the work around health and all policies? Yes? Important, right? Because it brings in different disciplines, different sectors, different potential, right, and resources to think about health in a very broad context. Feminist social justice is very similar school of thought here. It's really the asking of the question of what's the gender lens with which we need to do our organizing, with which we need to do our policy development and advocacy. Is there a unique and important gender lens that we need to apply to that work? So we would advocate that what's good for women is good for all. Now, that doesn't mean that all kinds of strategies, right, are going to work for all women. It's not the same thing. Okay, there's a difference there. So as we think about continuing to make the connection There's a lot of really important work, and I just wanted to draw out an example from the Ms. Foundation. They did some really, I think, groundbreaking work around women of color leadership development and in the context of policy change. Can I have somebody just to volunteer to read that for us? Please.
Drawing on their lived experiences across gender, race, and class, and the roles of caregivers, workers, and community leaders, women of color develop and implement solutions that address not only their own needs and priorities, but also those of their families, communities, and society as a whole. Blessings from the Ms. Foundation. For women, very much.
Thank you. So when we think about, again, making that bridge and creating that bridge between women, right, and the leadership of women working in the context of health equity, there's a couple of things that we want to be thinking about in terms of the kinds of supports, right, and why we want to do that. What are the outcomes behind that? And how, if we look at a gender lens, right, women lens in that process, we know that in a lot of ways, what that produces for us is really strengthening our democracy. Okay? So if we look at the long term, right, what's happening as we do this critical work, right, this is an important element of really catalyzing that equitable process, right, and equitable communities. And what we want to be doing is deliberately building the power of people in communities to reduce health disparities and promote social change. So just as, right, women make decisions, right, primary health care decisions for their families, and ultimately, right, for other families in that community, I think there's that power of sort of the connections and the social capital that happens, right, amongst women, right? We want to be thinking about this particular goal, changing the structures and systems that impact community health and well-being. So when we think about women's leadership in the context of systems, right, that functions within healthcare, that functions within institution, government agencies, there's a lot of potential for us to be thinking about catalyzing and building and supporting women's leadership to do that very thing. We also are very much about building effective alliances, right, across issues and sectors, right? Women work in all kinds of sectors, all kinds of disciplines and environments and communities. So how do we begin to reach out? And, you know, I would dare say, again, with all due respect to the women, I mean, to the men in the room, because we need you as well, right? The way that women work, the work that we do at CCP, I would say that there's a women's way of doing that we need to sort of lift up a bit, right? And to really sort of begin to learn about what that takes. And then leveraging women's tendency to lead by building deep-rooted relationships and trust in communities. Okay? That's not to say that men don't do this and that all women do this, but this is our tendency, okay? And so how do we leverage that tendency? So when we think about sort of the lessons learned and practices of how we want to do this, okay, there are some critical sort of hows that we want to pay attention to. And that is, the first and foremost is really about building relationships and trust. This is about community trust. This is also about across organizations, right? And it's long-term relationships that we're after. Okay, that's the crux, right, of the work that we need to be doing. Leadership development and what we describe as base building, right? Building that ground, right? Developing leaders within, providing training, forming alliances that really support women on the ground. Coalition building is another important element of what we want to do. So this is about building strategic relationships with allies, partners that start before, right, any kind of campaign, connects back to that building relationships. And this is the critical part. It ends long after any particular campaign or funder, right, or any particular set of resources or issues, because you're banking on those relationships so that when the time arises and you have an opportunity to organize, right, and come back together again, those connections are already there. combining insider and outsider strategies. So this is about sort of what we're doing on the outside, right, to gather attention, right, awareness, all of those things, as well as what's happening inside, the internal communications, right? Strategies that are about sitting on each other's sort of commissions and boards and advisory committees so that we have that connection, right? And we're always thinking about how to support one another in the context and across issues. Organizing across issues, policymaking levels and constituencies. This is critical work for us when we think about, right, public health and social determinants of health. We got to be thinking who are education allies. We got to be thinking who are environmental, you know, justice, who's our law enforcement, right, criminal justice allies. How do we connect with them? Language and culture, right, translation, revitalization, and access to language and culture. How do we begin to think about that so that we get the broadest exposure and the broadest inclusive process as possible? And then finally, messages and messengers that resonates in communities of color. I can't underscore this enough, right? I am not about to go into the Central Valley among, you know, the farm worker communities without my partner, right? The Central Valley Alliance, who has connections and deep-rooted relationships on the ground with farm worker communities. Okay? They are the voices. So in what ways can our organizations and policy initiatives incorporate these lessons and practices? So here I wanted to just share with you, and if I can get Mildred your help to pass out the, there's a couple of tools that we use at the center that we wanted to share with you. One of them is really going back to those elements and asking, doing kind of an organizational assessment, it's almost a self-assessment, to really think about, right, how are we organizing across issue areas? How are we developing leadership, particularly those leaders of women of color, communities of color? The other tool is when we think about women in leadership positions and in organizations and particular communities, one of the most important practices of what we can support to have happen and dialogue to happen is really some critical work around power analysis, right? We know that in any community organization, there are tremendous power relationships that exist. So if we look at what are the formal structures of power in community organizations, we can kind of get a sense of who's sort of formally in charge. If we look at the informal power relationships, we begin to really understand, how really power functions in communities, in that particular community. Okay. How is work actually being done? So one of the other handouts is an adaptation of some work from the policy link that we have integrated into our programming around power analysis and beginning to kind of support the constituencies that you work with, and particularly the women leaders, to really think about the relationship with power and in community settings. Oh, and then finally, I think I added also... there is a great equity framework for health by USAID that I think is a very logical and sort of common sense process and understanding about how do you have conversations about equity, right? What are the strategic sort of thinking that you need to have, right, as a part of the community around health equity, and then what are some of the questions that you need to be asking about actions and taking action. So that's the third. I hope everybody, I don't know if I brought enough copies, so I, but you can come to me later, and I think Mildred is going to start a list of some kind. So I'm just going to leave you all with a few thoughts and just our lived experiences around the work that we've been doing at CCP, actually cultivating and supporting women leaders and women of color leaders in our Women's Health Leadership Program experience, 15 years. It was a big idea back in 1995. I think it continues to be a big idea and a necessary one, right? To be really thinking about how do we support grassroots advocacy among women and particularly women of color working in underserved communities and communities of color. So we do this through a number of different ways, and our really ultimate goal is to create a circle of support, right? Somebody asked about sponsors. How do you do that? This is one of the elements that we sort of integrate as part of the programming. And it's also about engaging women as part of their whole selves to really impact not only their personal individual leadership, but also organizations, right? How do they function? What are their roles in organizations as well as in the community? So we try to do and touch on all of those things. And our program objectives, what we're trying to accomplish, are these things up here around developing social capital amongst women, particularly women of color, to build power and resiliency of women leaders working in the variety of different settings, and really looking at impacting, right, through women's leadership policy at the local, state, and national level. You have this in your, because I'm getting the red sign. So, so these are a couple of ways that we actually do. This is the how part of what we do in our women's leadership development. And then finally, thank you all for your attention. My email address is there. Feel free to contact us anytime. We'd be more than happy to talk with you further. Thank you.